Well, thanks, Greg. Let's see. I'll try to operate this correctly. So I'm glad to be invited to give a presentation, and today I'm going to be focusing on one aspect of soil lead, and that's testing it and then looking at bioavailability in soil lead. Okay, and so first, I want to recognize my co-authors, Dr. Obricki, who's in the audience, Dr. Shekel in the audience, and Krista Minka, who's in Reynoldsburg, gainfully employed, who did a good chunk of this work. Okay, so today, I always like to give talks, public talks, and if I tell people I'm a soil scientist or a soil chemist, I get an odd look. But I was at Case Western and talking to a medical school one day, and I told them, they asked, what are you? And I said, I'm a soil doctor. And they said, oh, that's fascinating. We didn't know there were soil doctors. And so so I would say that, in a way, we are. We're talking about assessing soil, lead, and if it needs treatment, then we treat it. That's the diagnosis, right? So in a way, that's what we're talking about. Today, I'm just talking about the assessment, and Dr. Shekel will talk about the treatment following me, right? And so the goal here is to provide information to make land use decisions. They don't really care how much lead they have, and just for esoteric reasons, they want to make a land use decision. Okay, so lead's pretty simple. We have a screening level that's pretty much universally accepted by US EPA, Ohio EPA, many EPAs around the country. It's 400 part per million. 400 part per million based on soil ingestion of dust or incidental ingestion of soil. And so if you're above 400 part per million, you have to do further investigation. If you're below it, there's no further investigation. As my friend Dr. Check, I would say, this is a one-way test, right? So if you, you're below 400, you're great. That's the one way. If you're above 400, you don't know yet, right? So how do we, what do we measure total lead on? Well, the most common technique is probably acid digestion, followed by ICP. Most people have a microwave digester these days. What's coming on strong and probably will replace the acid digesters in the future are XRF units, EPA method 6200. Just a caution that if you're doing it this way, where you actually have a gun placed against the soil, you're only penetrating 10 millimeters of soil, so you'll get the lead content in the top 10 millimeters. So generally, this involves is you got to homogenize the sample and then shoot it to get a representative sample. So that usually involves digging a hole, mixing it up, and then XRF. Don't just shoot, press and shoot. You're just getting this at the top surface. It doesn't penetrate that deep. But it is accurate, and you get more than lead. You get a lot of elements. I think in the future, we're going to see more of these. The price got to come down. They're $25,000 right now. Okay. Here's an inexpensive way that's been around pretty much since the 80s and 90s, and that's using soil testing labs that already got soil fertility tests based on things like Malic 3. They're using it for nutrients, and some work mainly in the Northeast was started in the 90s. Can we use these extractants to give us an idea, an estimate of the total lead? And in fact, they found out they could. You can, the soil testing labs runs this. Rutgers runs this test, Penn State, UMass. They're generally inexpensive tests. They're $20 or less for lead. And you do get a good estimate. Now, watch out. This is not a perfect method. It's from limited database, number of soils, usually done within the state where the testing lab is. But still, if you want an estimate, it's an inexpensive way of getting it. And you can actually get other nutrients too, like a garden test. So it helps when you tell people, I'm here to test your garden rather than I'm here to test your lead. And so there's more acceptance. Our research shows that if you take the Malic 3 number and you multiply by 2, you get a good estimate of total lead. Not perfect, but good. Okay, be careful with these tests. They're empirical. Their accuracy is soil dependent and it depends on the waste source in your soil. So also, here's the curve from a publication we had with Minka et al., and you can see it gets curvilinear at about 600 part per million and above. So this is not a very accurate test above 600, but who cares? We're using it for screening. We're asking the question, are we above or below 400 part per million? So for that purpose, we can get a good enough estimate. If we get 250 as our guests, we're below. If we get 600, we're above. Then what? If you want a more accurate number, there are standard EPA methods you should use instead of this Mailer 3 test. So having said that, this is some work we did in Cleveland. The good news is if you use Mailer 3, most of your soils are going to screen out. Even in Cleveland, which has a lot of industrial activity and higher lead, almost 70% of our sites screen out below 400. So these are 70 sites you don't have to test, but standard EPA methods. Okay, so that helps. In Columbus, it's almost 90%. So Mailer does have a purpose, and that's to screen out the low levels. Here's two sites, for example, that we were actually tested for management decisions. One, the soil lead went from 221 to 391, averaged 313. And so what that means is you're below 400, no restriction on the use. The one below it, average 800, exceed the SSL, what do we do next? Right? Well, here's what they usually do when you're at high levels. In comes the heavy equipment, and the consulting companies make their money on excavating and replacing soils. Actually, they should give the test free, because this is where they really make their money. And so they're going to say, dig it all up and take it away and bring in other soil. Okay? And this is very expensive, thousands and thousands of dollars per ton. So one of the things I'm going to tell you about is if we could use bioavailability in our soil testing, we might be able to prevent this. Not all these soils have to be dug up and taken away. So the next thing I'm going to talk about is measuring lead bioavailability. You fail the lead test, consider bioavailability before you bring in the digging haulers. Okay? So how does this work? Well, bioavailability basically works off this risk equation that says if you ingest soil, only a certain percent of it actually gets absorbed into your bloodstream, not all the lead. And that amount that gets absorbed is RBA, relative bioavailability. So in this term, CDI is how much lead you get in your bloodstream every day, and RBA is how much, you could think of it a way, is how much is actually dissolved and uptake into your bloodstream. So basically, relative bioavailability can go from 0 to 1. Okay, from 0 to 1. And the idea is to lower this number as much as you can. If it's 0, you don't have any uptake into your blood. But it's never 0. And if it's 100%, whatever you ingest all goes into your blood. And you never have 100%. So you have something usually in between. The default value EPA is 60% for lead. So 60% of the lead that you eat winds up in your bloodstream. And sometimes bioavailability can really drive the lead exposure risk. You'll hear risk assessors say ingestion is the driver on this site, which means this is the most important exposure pathway. Why would you use something like this? Well, say we did a total lead method by XRF, and we got 600 part per million. The default value is 60% RBA. If we then got an RBA and it was 20%, you can adjust your soil. The soil with 20% RBA would behave like a soil at 600, 20% RBA is equal to a soil at 200 with 60% RBA. So essentially, if you have one-third the RBA, you actually can divide it'll behave like a soil with three times less lead in it. Okay? So, you get 600 part per million lead, but it behaves like a 60% default as if it was 200, which is below the screen level, which means we don't need the diggers and haulers. Okay? So how do I get that RBA number? Hey, that sounds good. I don't have to dig it up, right? Okay. You actually can enlist an animal model for only $30,000 to $50,000. So, you can send the soil and get that RBA number by a controlled study for $30,000 to $50,000, or you can do an adult mouse model. We're not sure. I think this will be accepted by lead, and I don't know what the cost will be. It'll be less than that. But most people would say, I'm growing tomatoes. I'm not growing platinum tomatoes. And so I don't have $30,000 for this. And so what do poor folk do? This. This is what we do. We use simulated gastrointestinal fluid, which is in vitro methods. It's no animal. It's not the animal. But we're trying to measure the bioavailable fraction by using these methods that are stomach fluid. So we do the stomach fluid extraction. We measure ICP. But here's the key. You're not done when you get the lead bioaccessibility. You're going to get a lead 30% lead bioaccessible. 30% dissolves. Bioaccessible lead is how much dissolves in the stomach fluid as a fraction of the total lead. But you're not done, because what you need in that risk equation is RBA. What you need in this equation is in vivo bioavailability. You don't have that. You have in vitro. So you cannot use bioaccessibility in that risk equation. Okay, so what do you do now? Well, we follow EPA guidance. You would actually say this in vitro method actually has to be predictive of bioavailability. There has to be a predictive equation. You have to somewhere be able to take that bioaccessibility number, put it into a regression, and predict an RBA. Then you can use the RBA in your risk equation to make your adjustment. You can't do it with bioaccessibility. You need a bioavailability. Here's an example of an acceptable method. This is EPA method 1340. This is the in vivo study. All these soils were fed to the pig at great expense to determine RBAs. Here's the in vitro method, and they're correlated, and that's the predictive equation. So you take the soil, you get your bioaccessibility number, plug it in there, subtract that, now you have an RBA. That's the number you can put into your risk equation. So don't use bioaccessibility, you have to convert it to RBA. Okay? So what methods are out there that are getting used for urban soils? For sure 1340, it's pH 1.5 method, 0.4 molar glycine. Is there a regression equation to predict bioavailability? So if I use this method and get bioaccessibility, can I turn it into an RBA number, a bioavailable number? The answer is yes. I have a regression equation that's published in Drexler. If I use PBET method, yes, Ruby 96, there's a regression equation. I could take the bioaccessible number and put it in. If I use OSI-IVG, is there regression? Yes, you could take a equation from Schroeder et al. And put it in there. If you use the Urban Soil Bioaccessible Lead Test, USBLT, described by Z et al., is there equation? No. So you cannot convert it to an RBA, and if you can't convert it to an RBA, I don't know how you use it in a risk assessment. Does the bioaccessibility change on the depending on the bioaccessibility method? You bet it does. Here's three soils. Here's five methods. Does it change? Yeah, 63% bioaccessible here, 2% here. That's quite a range. Okay, and so it does matter what bioaccessibility method you use. I would say if you want a high number, use this. If you want a low number, use this, right? But having said that, what really matters here is not this bioaccessible number. You're not done yet. You've got to take this and put it in a regression and see what the RBA is. Maybe they all predict the same RBA. Hopefully they do. Okay? The regressions will all be different. So you really got to take, lead bioavailability is not this. You got to take it and put in an equation, which you can for 4 to 5 methods getting used. Okay? And hopefully they all come up with the same number. So I'm not too worried if they don't agree. I want to know what they predict for RBA. Okay, coming soon, ITRC, Interstate Technology Regulatory Council, we've worked 3 years on a document. It's going to be online for risk assessors and regulators. Great. This is going to be interactive. It's going to be great. And it's going to be how to use these methods, in vitro methods, criteria you should use, and how to actually do the calculations online. This November, it'll help a lot. So we asked the question, can Malik 3 be used to estimate bioaccessible lead? Hey, we used it to predict total lead. Can it predict bioaccessible? And we published this in JEQ, and it's one of these figures you wish you had back, because it looked pretty good. It's like, wow, look, we could predict it. Then I thought, I don't believe it. We have very few number of soils. It depends on the soil and the soil type. I really don't trust this, even though it looks great. It was from Cleveland, same kind of soil type. I want to see more. So I would say don't use this Malic 3 yet. Use the in vitro methods. They've really been tested. Okay, and they're not expensive. They're $25 to $35. They're coming down. People say they're too expensive. They're not. Okay, one other thing. Bioavailability-based soil remediation. Can we use these methods to evaluate soil remediation? This is method 1340, and you will see for phosphorus-treated soils, okay? So take a look at this. Phosphorus-treated soil, these bars. Here's the animal. Here's method 1340. It greatly overestimates the bioavailability. So for phosphorus-treated soils, 1340 is too strong. It extracts more than the animal does. So it doesn't look like your treatment method works. But if you use pH 2.5, same method, it matches the animal. And we're seeing this over and over. 1340, if it's raised to 2.5, will work. But 1340, the standard one right now, is not good. The pH needs to be higher for phosphorus-treated soils and maybe other treated soils. Okay, so I think this is the new frontier. 51st anniversary of Star Trek. I think using soil amendments to reduce contaminant availability, and people in this room will say, that's not new. We've been doing it for years. Add stuff, decrease the bioavailability, right? Yeah, but what's new is, what kind of method are you going to use to actually accurately predict, without feeding it to an animal, that you got the real RBA? I don't know. I'm using pH 2.5, method 1314, but I have very limited data to do that with. But I'll never use the standard method because it won't. The treatments don't work, but the animal says they work. The blood lead in the animal goes down, but the extractability does not with the standard method. With me? Oh, by the way, if you're interested in more than just people, we just completed a study with Nelson Beyer. We published this manuscript, and we evaluated six in vitro methods, and two methods, 1340 pH 2.5 and the OSU method, were beautifully correlated with our friend here, the Japanese quail, blood lead from the Japanese quail. So some of these methods can be extended maybe to avian and mammal receptors. The wildlife PBAC actually was lousy. It didn't work, so forget that. And some of these other methods did. But this is the kind of thing you need for an animal study, and I think that's going to be bigger use there than it is for people, ecological. But we got to get it adopted, okay? And so here's the final decision table. What do you do with assessing lead in urban soils? I would say if you're below 400 part per million lead, you're done. No further testing. Do what you want. If you're above it, go ahead and check the RBA using a bioaccessibility method. Make sure you have an equation to plug your bioaccessibility number in. And if that doesn't help you, then you really got to go to management practices or treatment. Notice I didn't say excavation. You don't have to excavate generally anything from these lots. You can still treat them unless they got 10,000 part per million. Then you need to excavate it. But we rarely see that in an urban area. Okay, shameless promotion. Our lab is actually offering these tests for a small fee to the public, and we're got a swell lab, soil, water, environmental lab, and we're going to be, it's pretty bad, wasn't it? Anyway, we're going to be offering these tests more online. We're going to build a website this year. We're going to get our act together this year because we need to get these tests used. So people say, this is great. Where do I get it? You don't. It's hard to find. So we'll be extending them, and hopefully several of Jason, everyone else will start offering these tests, right? So take-home points. Soil fertility tests should only be used in lead screening, period. If you want an accurate number, use EPA methods. Bioaccessible should be measured using methods that have been shown to be predictive of RBA lead. If you don't have an IV-IVC, don't use it. RBA lead is the endpoint, not the bioaccessible. 1340 is not an accurate predictor in P-treated soils. We probably need a higher pH extraction. Dr. Shekel knows this. He's on a committee that's going to be looking at this with EPA. And lastly, if you do assessment and you include bioavailability, I don't think we're going to be excavating and replacing a lot of soil. We'll be protecting our soil resource and keeping it in place. Thank you.